Well, I hope your week is going well. We're still talking about the Abrahamic covenant, believe it or not, but mostly not so much the covenant, but the ramifications of it, the things that happened because of it, results of it. I'm going to take you to 2 Kings 18, 9 through 12 to start off with. We're talking about Israel / Samaria cast out and off. 2 Kings 18, 9 through 12. He defeated the Philistines as far as Gaza and its territory. Now, in the fourth year of King Hezekiah, which was in the seventh year of Hoshea, son of Elah, king of Israel, Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came up against Samaria and besieged it. At the end of 3 years, they captured it in the sixth year of Hezekiah, which was the ninth year of Hoshea, king of Israel. Samaria was captured. Then the king of Israel king of Assyria carried Israel away into exile to Assyria and put them in Halah on the Habor, the river of Gozan, in the cities of the Medes, because they did not obey the voice of the Lord their God, but transgressed his covenant, even all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded. They would neither listen nor do it. So the 10 tribes were removed from their land or their kingdom, and another group of people replaced them instead of them being Israel. The people who were transplanted there were lawfully inhabitants of the land that was previously inhabited by Israel. This is how the land of Samaria was filled with what is known as Samaritans in Jesus' day and earlier than that. They were either half Israelites or foreigners from the named places. It was a sad state of affairs, to be sure. Let me read for you 2 Kings 17, 23 and 24. Let's start with 22. The sons of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which he did, and they did not depart from them until the Lord removed Israel from his sight, as he spoke through all his servants, the prophets. So Israel was carried away into exile from their own land to Assyria until this day. The king of Assyria brought men from Babylon and from Cutha and from Ava and from Hamath and from Sephar Vaim, and settled them in the cities of Samaria in place of the sons of Israel. So they possessed Samaria and lived in its cities. Polytheism was the result. It was said that they were fearing the Lord, but they also served their own gods, after the manner of nations whom they carried off, the nations from among whom they had been carried away. That's just a long way of saying they did the same thing as Israel did. That's why Israel was deported. But they did like Israel, in that they feared Israel, it feared the Lord like Israel did, which wasn't very pure. They rejected the Lord's priests, as you recall. They also worshipped the works of their hands, whether it be earthworks or high places. They made altars, groves, and temples of their own design, and they worshipped there the idols of other gods. If anyone wanted to destroy a nation, this is how you do it. A little leaven, remember, leavens the whole lump. Hear the charge against them from Jeremiah and Hosea. We begin with Jeremiah 3:20. Surely, as a woman treacherously departs from her lover, so you have dealt treacherously with me, O house of Israel, declares the Lord. Then in Hosea 5:3, we read, I know Ephraim, and Israel is not hidden from me. For now, O Ephraim, you have played the harlot. Israel has defiled itself. Their deeds will not allow them to return to their God, for a spirit of harlotry is within them, and they do not know the Lord. That's Hosea 5:3 and 4. Then there's also the cry of Hosea 11:8, which says, and this I've found to be a very intense passage that we need to always pay attention to as far as who God is. How can I give you up, O Ephraim? How can I surrender you, O Israel? How can I make you like Admah? How can I treat you like Zeboim? Those two last cities are the ones that were around Sodom and Gomorrah, if you recall. My heart is turned over within me. All my compassions are kindled. So the Lord goes on to say, after expressing, you know, pain and suffering in an anthropomorphic way, I will not execute my fierce anger. I will not destroy Ephraim again, for I am God and not man, the Holy One in your midst, and I will not come in wrath. They will walk after the Lord. He will roar like a lion. Indeed, he will roar, and his sons will come trembling from the west. Notice the direction there. That becomes important later. They will come trembling like birds from Egypt and like doves from the land of Assyria. And I will settle them in their houses, declares the Lord. A little geography there, all of it being very important, but still, something we need to take note of for right now. God doesn't want to send them away from his face, but they made it impossible for him not to do so. And so there is that cry in Hosea 4, verse 12. I'm sorry, in verse 11, verse 8, but I'm now turning to Hosea 4, verse 12. My people consult their wooden idol, and their diviner's wand informs them, for a spirit of harlotry has led them away, and they have played the harlot, departing from their God. So, still, he cries after them, even though they're really unresponsive to him, and they've gone so wrong. Then a little bit down the page there, 4:15, Hosea 4:15, he says, though you play the harlot, do not let Judah become guilty. Also do not go to Gilgal or go up to Beth-Aven and take the oath as the Lord lives. So we know that Judah did play the harlot themselves, and they probably, all accounts being taken, sinned worse or offended God more than Israel. And they too were kept, led away into captivity, only they went to Babylon, as you, I'm sure, remember. But since the thread of Ephraim is Samaria, we're not going to talk about Judah so much as we focused on Israel right now. But since the thread of Ephraim is Samaria, according to Isaiah 7:9, we can understand Hosea 10:5, which says, the inhabitants of Samaria will fear for the calf of Beth-Aven. Indeed, its people will mourn for it, and its idolatrous priests will cry over it, over its glory, since it has departed from it. Beth-Aven is a house of vanities. That's what it means literally, or emptiness. This is where one of the two golden calves was set up by Jeroboam. And of course, that's vanity and lies. It's an idol, a man-made cow. So they trusted in vanities and lies, and that's what the Lord is saying. Don't let it, Judah go that way. But of course they did. The vanity and the lies always provoke Yahweh to anger. So back to Israel, more info is provided regarding their calf worship in Hosea 8:5. Hosea is really not about Hosea so much as it is about Israel. In Israel's Gomer. So Hosea 8:5 says, "He has rejected your calf, O Samaria, saying, 'My anger burns against them. How long will they be incapable of innocence?'" So that's pretty strong language. Isaiah fills us in more. Isaiah and Hosea are contemporaries, by the way. Isaiah 10:5-8, "Woe to Assyria, the rod of my anger, and the staff in whose hands is my indignation. I send it against a godless nation, commission it against the people of my fury, to capture booty and to seize plunder, and to trample them down like mud in the streets. Yet it does not so intend, nor does it plan so in its heart, but rather its purpose to destroy and to cut off many nations. For it says, 'Are not my princes all kings?'" That last statement is fairly instructive. It was a boast of the Assyrians that they're going to cut Israel off completely. But God would not allow that. He said so in his word. There'll never, ever be a time when they are not, as at least a remnant. He did allow the Assyrians to punish and deport them after the manner of Egypt, it says in Amos 4:10, which is pretty colorful language and instructive. Let me remind you that the names of Ephraim, Joseph, Rachel, Judah, Jacob, Israel, and many other names are significant as names of historical people, historical individuals, historical nations, and historical tribes. But they are also used prophetically. But as they are used prophetically, those names have the same significance, and they refer to the same people prophetically that were alive in history. So that, or their line. That's also true when you use Judah and Jews. The name Israel often includes Jews and Judah, but not always. Sometimes it has nothing to do with Judah and Jews. Israel, as the birthright nation, is made an unconditional promise, which has to do with the last days. And you find that in Jeremiah 31. In that chapter, Jeremiah uses the names of Jacob, Ephraim, Israel, Samaria, along with Rachel, which is appropriate for the birthright nation. Yahweh's firstborn is that birthright nation. The birthright nation of Israel, Yahweh's firstborn, will be gathered again just as he scattered them, that is, in the last days, from the land where they have been scattered. Now, I think you have to realize that they're not at home. He's got to take them from where they are back to Israel. So she's then going to plant vines upon the mountains of Samaria. That's their homeland once they're brought back, and a great company of them will return to that place. Unlike the Jews who went into the Babylonian captivity and returned 70 years later, Israel, aside from the one priest that was mentioned earlier in the text that we were reading, who was sent to Samaria because the Samaritans didn't know God. The ones who were transplanted there is the ones we're referring to when Israel was deported. But there's not one word that shows that any tribe, tribes, or remnants of tribes of those 10 tribes known as Israel ever returned and lived in their former home. That in spite of the promise that I just told you about, where they're going to be gathered again, just as he scattered them in the last days to the land where they had been scattered from. So I hope that makes sense. Later on we can talk about the captivity of the Jews, which occurred in 586 and 7, written about by Amos over 100 years before it took place. Amos also used various names, using Isaac to refer the name Isaac to refer to either one of the kingdoms, but there can be no doubt that Amos gave the name of Isaac to the 10-tribed nation of Israel in Amos 7, 9 through 15. After having been taken to Assyria and having been given a promise that they shall eventually return, something else must happen prior to that. That prior event is found in Amos 9, 9. Where it says, "For behold, I am commanding, and I will shake the house of Israel among all the nations." See, they're scattered still. "As grain is shaken in a sieve, but not a kernel will fall to the ground." So he's going to shake them out in a way, but not lose any of them. Amazingly, following that is Amos 9, 14 and 15, which won't necessarily sound like it's amazing until I explain it. "Also, I will restore the captivity of my people Israel, and they will rebuild the ruined cities and live in them." See, "and they will also plant vineyards and drink their wine and make gardens and eat their fruit. I will also plant them on their land, and they will not again be rooted out from their land, which I have given them, says the Lord your God." This is at the very end of Amos. And it's amazing because it was written 2 centuries before the Jews were sent into captivity. Understand, I'm talking about the Jews at this point, Judah. In essence, that is, when this was written, it's when they were still counted among the faithful. And it had no application to the Jewish people whatsoever. But when fulfilled, the people to whom it refers shall not again be rooted out from their land, says the Lord their God, is referring to Israel. Yet so many say that this prophecy was fulfilled when the Jews returned from captivity. I say no, that is not true. So we'll stop there. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace. So until we see each other again, Lord willing, shalom.